Hi, I'm Tony. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Tony.
My sobriety date is September 25th, 2007. I have a home group. It's the Gift of Desperation group. We meet on Wednesdays at 7 o'clock. We have a rotating format. It's an off-charter colony in Richmond, Virginia, and I could give you some more information. We'd love to see you. I have a sponsor. I've had a sponsor since before I got sober, actually. And I've had the same sponsor, and I sponsor men in Alcoholics Anonymous, And Alcoholics Anonymous has changed my life. It's the greatest thing I've ever done for myself, and it's the greatest thing I've ever done for people who care about me. I have a debt I'll never repay here. I truly believe that, and not every day is great, but pretty much my life has continuously got a little better with a couple, few steps forward, a few steps back kind of deal, I like to thank the group for having me, and I'd really like to thank Billy for asking me to come up. I've spoken here, but it's been a little while. I got a lot of respect for this group, and I got a lot of respect for people in this group, and I was speaking to a friend of mine and a friend of ours, Bob Edwards. For those of you know, if you have the, if you've had the opportunity to get to know Bob, you love Bob, he asked that I let you guys know that to tell you hi and that I was up here, because I told him I was coming up here, and he sparked up, I mean, some of Bob's had a tough road, and it's not getting easier. So I'm sure he would love to hear from anybody, but I just wanted to make a point to say that while I was here. And also, he shared something with me that I've been thinking about. He told me he stepped away from speaking, that he's getting slower. I don't know. I don't see it. He's still sharp. And anytime I'm with him, it's Alcoholics Anonymous. That tends to be what happens when we get together, regardless of what the situation is. It always ends up being about AA, And I listen when Bob talks. Him and my sponsor, he's been there as long as my sponsor. They're best buddies. They used to take me to meetings, used to invite me to places when I was new, or I just felt like this wallflower where I had no social skills outside of a bar setting. And they would ask me to go anyhow, and I would sit there and nobody ever said anything. They let me just sit there, and with time I got more and more comfortable, and I started to open up to these guys, and AA's funny in a way. It's like, I remember I got forced into Alcoholics Anonymous through the court system. I had been released from the penitentiary. I had a cousin who I hadn't spoken to in 20 years who said, hey, why don't you come stay with us in Gloucester? Which was, I'd never been to Gloucester before. I knew nobody there except for them. And for some reason, I said yes. And maybe through some chain of events, maybe I'll talk about that in my conversation. But I walked into those meetings and I picked people apart. I got nothing in common with these people. Nothing like, they don't look like me. They don't do the same things I do. What are you going to be able to do for me? And those same people became my foundation of Alcoholics Anonymous, and they carried me. I don't want to say they carried me, because we don't do that in AA. We walk shoulder to shoulder with people. But I showed a little bit of willingness, and they helped me along the way very much, And Bob and my sponsor were two of these guys, And I just have a lot of debt to them and to AA in general, AA was there for me when I needed it, or when I wanted it. That's probably a better comment. I needed it a long time before I got here, But anyhow, I was born in Norfolk, Virginia. My father was a tugboat captain. My mother was a stay-at-home mother. I have a half brother, an older brother. He's my brother for any way I look at it. He's been there my entire life, but he has a different father. And then I have a younger sister. We're all about 5 years, 6 years apart. We lived in Willoughby, Ocean View, for anybody that's familiar. I said my father was a tugboat captain, but he was a lot of other things too. One being a potential alcoholic, but my parents split when I was, I guess, right around getting out of kindergarten, first grade. And I remember being a kid and asking my mother why she left my father, and she said it was because of his drinking. She didn't go into a ton of detail, but something about it is like I remember that. I remember that part of the conversation anyhow. I just remember we were living at my grandmother's house. And I just, even like as a kid, it was a tense time. I can't put a name or a face to what it was, but I certainly remember that it was like an uncomfortable time. And my mother decided that she had some friends in the Outer Banks and on Hatteras Island. And so we picked up and moved to the Outer Banks, I think that as much as my upbringing has kind of made me the person I am today, it was a small town. It was a sense of community. We were a little bit, I remember feeling a little bit of an outsider because 95% of the people, maybe even 99% of the people there at that time, this is 40 years ago, were from there. They were all cousins and uncles and aunts, And I felt like a little outsider of that in not having a father, but I came to love it. I had so much freedom as a kid. I was able to, I remember being at my grandmother's house. I couldn't leave like not just the block, but like that one side of the block that my mother lived on, And it was like, oh my God, the other side of the block might as well have been the other side of the world, And it wasn't like that. We rode our bikes everywhere, our dogs. We had a ton of dogs, ton of cats. They roamed. Everybody just roamed and did their own thing, I used to hitchhike the roads when I was like maybe 9 or 10 years old, and I was never out there longer than five minutes before someone came along and picked you up, Everybody used to get together on Sundays. They didn't have cable TV at first, and that was like everybody brought their dogs and their families and their kids, and we used to go out onto the point down in Hatteras every Sunday, and they would, barbecue and, go out in the water, fish, party, whatever they were doing. And I just loved it. I remember telling my mother, I never want to leave this place when I was a kid, One of the things about growing up in a small town is you, which I'm, I mean, maybe some of y'all know this, is I found myself getting into things pretty early at an early age. It was nothing for teenagers to be at parties with 30-year-olds, so I got into some things pretty quickly, I was. I was an unpopular kid. I was pretty popular. I could hang out with just about anybody. I hear people talk about the chameleon thing, and I guess I certainly had some of that because I could be friends with the stoners. I played basketball and was the team captain, but I was also smoking weed with these guys over here, and so I could like blend in all around, Basketball was the most important thing in my life at one point, Then when I was about 13, I had these two guys I used to ride to school with. I thought they were the coolest guys. They were, I would surf with them in the morning before school, and they were listening to different music than everybody was listening to. And I would give them like my lunch money for gas money just to ride with them, And there was some school dance that was coming along, and I remember being in that car one time with them. These guys being like, "Hey, Tony, what do you think about smoking weed?" And I'm like, "I'm never going to do drugs." And now I know what they were doing was they were feeling me out before they fired up a joint in the car, you know? And but I was like, "I'm never going to drink and I'm never going to party, you know." I seen what it did to my dad. I didn't say all that, but I think that's where it came from, you know. There was some high school dance going on. I don't know what the plan was, but somehow they were going to try to sneak me in, and I don't know what the plan was for that. Because again, it's like I went to a school, it was K through 12th grade. It was 500 people. Everybody knew everybody. So I'm not real sure what the plan was. But they picked me up and they had some wine coolers. And I mean, they said, "Hey, Tony, you want a wine cooler?" I mean, of course I said yes. You know, these guys were like my heroes. Yeah. And I just remember being really nervous and drink. I don't know how many I had of them, but I drank them really quickly. And we were on the way to the school and they turned around. And I think they were deciding this maybe it's not a great idea. And they dropped me off at the local game room. And I tell you, I mean, I was a nervous kid. You know, I would walk into the cafeteria and I'd be like, "Should I sit with those guys?" Like everybody was watching me. I was like real conscientious of every decision I made, you know? And I walked in that place and I was on top of the world. You know, I was funny. I was carrying on. People were laughing. I was talking to this older girl. She seemed to be, you know, she was, in my eyes, she was a woman, but she was probably 17. You know, I was 13. And, you know, I tell you, just that sense of relief that I have with those people and not having to walk on those eggshells like I did on a daily basis, you know. You know, I drank some more there. I don't know how much. I can't recall how much I drank, but it was enough for me to fall on a pool table and chip my front teeth. They found me in the restaurant next door, half passed out in one of the bathroom stalls. Somebody called my track. It was a kid that I went to school with, same grade as me. They tracked down my home phone number, and for some reason, my mother sent my grandmother to pick me up. And to this day, I mean, I remember that night so vividly. I mean, there's way more important things that have happened in my life, but I remember that to this day like it was yesterday. It's so vivid how that night went down. Or my grandmother asking me, "You okay, Tony?" And I started getting sick all over the dashboard of my mother's Chevette. You know. And I tell you, it scared me the next day when I got up. You know, I wasn't one of those that was like, "Oh God, I gotta do that immediately," because I was kind of scared with the loss of control I had, you know. But not shortly after that, I don't know how long another I got up with my friend Royce. I did a lot of my first with Royce, and I got drunk with him and smoked some weed with him, and I made it home with no consequences, you know. And from that day on, my whole life changed. You know, it absolutely changed. What used to be important wasn't as important anymore. Within a year, I was out off the basketball team because my grades were low. The friends that I had grown up with, I wasn't hanging out with them anymore because I was hanging out with people that were older than me and who were doing the things that I wanted to do. You know, and I mean, Bill talks about the boomerang that would turn around and rip them to ribbons. Man, does that hit home to me? You know, I think I'm probably the only one who's shocked that I ended up an alcoholic, you know, and that the things that happened to me because you could see me coming from a mile away. You know, I was the kid who was like, if you were doing this, I had to be doing that. If you were doing that, I had to be doing this. And I drank as much as I could, as often as I could, as often as I could, you know. I never really wanted to stop drinking. I enjoyed drinking for days. I just didn't like the consequences that came with it, you know. And that was, you know. I hear people talk about step four and step five and step nine being difficult. I mean, I sat in step one for 20 years. That's hands down the most difficult step, most painful step that I ever went through. Coming to that understanding that I was powerless over alcohol. From that time on, it was like, one bottle of Boone's Farm, two bottles of Boone's Farm, whatever I could get my hands. Country Quencher was my favorite, and like I started having consequences pretty quickly, like getting up, kicked off the basketball team and my grades, and I got in trouble with the law just because I'm a lot of times, like throughout my drinking, I had a lot of like consequences. And I mean, a lot of that's like because I'm insecure and I constantly feel like I got to prove myself. And I did a lot of my drinking out in the open. I was a bar drinker, And so I would do crazy, obnoxious things when I was drinking and bad stuff would happen to me, Because I think I was so afraid of you figure out who I really was that I tried that much harder to portray something that I wasn't. Like, it started out as like, wow, Tony's wild, Tony's crazy. And towards the end of my drinking, it's like, Tony's a lush. I'm not. That stuff's not funny once you get past a certain age, and it's not impressive. And that was my experience. My family moved from the Outer Banks basically two reasons. My mother was trying to get me out of there, and just financial situations. My mother was trying to raise three kids. She was a medical transcriptionist. She worked at a general store down there. I never realized how difficult things must have been till I got older, but I can tell you that we moved every year. Every year we were in a different house, and she was gone a lot. So talking about freedom in a sense of like I call the shots and I do what I want was something that was really in me. And I don't blame her for that. She did what she had to do to keep us eating. And I don't remember not having, I would realize I didn't have that other things that other people didn't have, but not to a point where I felt like I was destitute or that I was any less than people for that, And I tell you, man, I have more and more respect for my mother the older I get. She's my hero, one of my heroes for sure, But I also through AA and getting older that, there's, I also have come to forgive my father and come to an understanding with, it's not always one-sided, He certainly had the alcohol problems, but there were some other things that could have been done differently. Like my mother hid a lot of stuff from him just because I'd be like, don't tell dad. So I would get in some trouble. She would bury it. Then I'd get in some more trouble. And it would get to a point where we had to go to court and she would go to my father. And she'd be like, well, it's not just this, it's this, and this too, Which, I'm his kid too, I mean, AA has taught me a lot about a lot of things. There's a lot of gray in life. It's not always black and white, We moved back to Virginia Beach. I went to a Catholic school my first year. I wasn't invited back at the end of the year. It was constantly me banging heads, me like, straddling the line on anything, making people tell me to do stuff, where I just couldn't conform, I went to a school where they smoked weed in the smoking zone, and now I'm at a Catholic school. It's like two different worlds. By that following year, I was supposed to graduate. I missed too much school by December to graduate. And this is all because of my drinking, of course. It's progressing. And I was talking with Billy. I'm like an avid surfer now. I travel all over the place. I mean, AA has allowed me to do that. And it's like I lost so many passions through my drinking and drugging, It's like I quit surfing. Music's important to me. I quit going to concerts. I lost that position on the basketball. It just slowly robbed me of everything, where the only thing I had left was the boots, you know? And for me, it's like, I mean, I've had friends of mine that I've watched that were like on hard drugs. Like, I've watched their life change in like a month or two, like just come crashing down. And most of the time for alcoholism, it's like a slow death. You know, it's like I accept a little bit every morning. And then one day I look in the mirror and I was like, how did I ever get here? This was never the plan. Know, this wasn't my plan. And here I am, and the book talks about like digging a hole so deep that you never thought you can get out of. I know that feeling, you know. So I have a strained relationship with my father, and this is my senior year. It's his birthday. I give him a phone call. I get his answering machine. I'm like, hey, Dad, happy birthday. Hope you're great, whatever. Like, let me do my duty and get off here and go do what I want to do, you know? Because my problem was with him was he was an authority figure. I could march all over my mother, you know? And I mean, I carry that stuff into to most of my romantic relationships, you know, just a lot of manipulation. Typically make you feel sorry for me till you got off my back so I could go back to my business, you know? I carry that into relationships, but that started with my mother, you know? So yeah, I had a strained relationship with him because he'd be like, yeah, you better not do that, you know? And I wouldn't get that. Yeah. So I remember my mother waking me up the next morning and she's like, I got to tell you something, Tony. I can tell there's a problem. And she was like, your father committed suicide last night. And he committed suicide on his birthday. And I share that for a couple reasons is I use that for a crutch for a long, long time, you know. Again, mostly as a manipulation tool with my mother. Had nothing to do with me being alcoholic. I was already drinking alcoholically, you know. But I, you know, anytime I get some stuff and she would be like, hey, Tony, well, you know, your father just passed away. It felt like someone had lifted a cinder block off my chest when she would say that. And that was because I didn't have to take responsibility for my behavior and I didn't have to change what I was doing. Really, I wasn't able to get sober. And so I started taking responsibility for my own behavior and fixing it, you know, with plenty of help from others. But I had to show the willingness. I had to do the work. And another reason is, you know, it's like it's one of the first gifts that Alcoholics Anonymous gave me, you know. I went 15 years just stuffing that and never taking a look at that. You know, I didn't spread his ashes. They sat in a closet because I didn't even want to look at that stuff. You know, I was in the penitentiary and they asked me to do something like this. It was a behavioral modification is what they called it. And I was doing something similar to what I'm doing here. And this is 15 plus years later, and I sobbed like a baby in front of those guys because I had not looked at that stuff and I had piled alcohol and drugs on top of that for so long that I never had a look at it. And then I got stuck in a position where there was no alcohol, no drugs, and you were asking me to take a look at it. And I had no way to deal with that stuff. When AA, I came to AA, it was like, you know, this is what happens to us is, you know, jails, institutions, and death if we don't find the spiritual side of this program. And for whatever reason, my father was unable to find it, you know. So, you know, I was never one, I had no goals or aspirations. I knew I wasn't going to go to college. I just thought big things were going to happen to me, for me. You know, Bill talks about like, I would manage the situations with the utmost assurance. You know, I don't know what it was, but when it showed up on my doorstep, I certainly was going to be able to handle it, you know. while everybody else was going off and doing their things, I was just like, I started getting involved in illegal stuff that allowed me to stay out all night and to, party like I wanted to. Really what I want to do is sleep late, if I sleep at all, and be in the bar every night. That's what I really wanted to do. There was a stint where I was a family member helped me get a tugboat job, and that's probably the best I ever did before I got sober, because I'd get on the boat and I wouldn't see land again for 30 days, so I couldn't drink. But what happened was, it's like, here I've had 2 weeks off and I got to be on the boat the next day early, instead of like, hey, I'm going to take, I've been partying for 13 days and I probably ought to take tonight off so I can be there early. I would be, my thought was like, I better blow it out tonight because I'm not going to get another opportunity again. And I started missing the boat, and like literally
Wow.
and figuratively, I would miss the boat. And you can't do that. And then I'd be so ashamed and embarrassed. Sometimes I was so drunk, they said they would come in there and they would shake, literally shake me, and I wouldn't get up. And then I'd have to spend the next 2 weeks looking at these guys in the face, and I'd try to work my butt off just to like make up for the trouble I caused, But eventually that didn't work out, So I got into this other stuff, and I never got rich. I was never no kingpin or anything like that. Typically I was buying drinks with somebody else's money. I was living out of duffel bags. I was sleeping on your couch probably, but thought I was somebody important, because my self-worth was based on what I had in my pocket. If I had something in my pocket I thought you wanted, I was super arrogant. If I didn't have that, I was staring at my shoes. And I know why I thought like that, is because that's how I looked at you. What's in your pocket? What can you do for me? If you don't have anything, get out of the way. I would suck people dry. I would use them up for whatever I could use them up for. And then when they were done and couldn't provide any more, I'd move on to somebody else. I mean, the relationships had, it was always her car, it was always her house. It was pretty pathetic. That's what it was. By the time I was, by the time I was 28, the state of Virginia had declared me a habitual drunkard. I had been arrested over 30 some times for alcohol related charges. I had 8 to 10 DUIs, a couple as a juvenile that were dismissed. I got out of a couple. I got four that are on my record. I was a habitual offender before I was even old enough to drink. I remember, and I'm a jailbird. I was in and out doing short little bids for a while, and then there was a point where I was in jail a year, I was out a year, I was in a year, was out a year, then I was got sent to the penitentiary for 2.5 years. I had a lawyer that my mother had paid for. Had this sweetheart deal for me. I was going to go in there. I was going to get the detention and diversion. These are like little camps, 6 month detention, then another 6 months where they let you work. You're able to make money, you pocket money, and you go about your business. This was the deal that we had worked out. I hadn't slept for 2 days when I went to court that morning. I was a wreck. It was the worst year of my life because I was out on bond, knowing I was going to go to prison, just not for how long. And I was basically working for the partying I had done the week before, And I went into court, and they're like, oh, we put you in another judge's. You got a different prosecuting attorney, and we're putting you in another to a different judge. So like my whole deal was out the window. And that's, they were like, they sent me to prison for 2.5 years, you know. And it's probably the greatest thing that ever happened to me. I look at God and AA in my life, how the trees fell a certain way to land exactly where I am today, and there's been a plan. I couldn't see it. And some of the worst things that have happened to me in my life, it seemed like the worst things, ended up being the best things that could ever happen. I see it as God nudging me in a direction, God doing for me what I can't do for myself. And these were one of those things because I had every intention to go taking that little bit of money I saved and going right back to doing what I was doing, you know? And really, that term in prison was like the first time that I really thought about not drinking and using drugs again. Every time before that, I always had a plan. You know, sometimes it was going to be different or I'd stay away from those people, but it was always just a decision I made in my mind, you know? And it never worked, you know. But I didn't think I needed help or asked for any help. You know, I did a couple AA like program type things in there because really I was looking for a certificate to help me maybe get my license back one day and maybe, you know, get off probation sooner or whatever it was. My heart wasn't genuine, you know. So I got released to a halfway house. I'm going to share a little something about this. I was there for about 3 months when, like they help you get a job. I couldn't find a job because it was in Harrisonburg at a place called Jemine Shaft. So I ended up getting stuck in this poultry plant. It was horrific. You could smell it from miles away, you know. And the first thing they do is they walk you through the whole process. I mean, straight from where they pull the bird out of the cage to the where it comes out wrapped up in package, and it's brutal. I mean, I was like the weak link. They kept bouncing me around from job to job because I just could not keep up with these guys. It was all Latinos and they were great. I loved them, but I hardly could speak. And they were so kind with me. Because I'm telling you, I was the weak link. I could not keep, they couldn't find a spot for me, you know. But I got to know a couple of them. I told them what I liked doing. And one night was my birthday, and this guy stuck something in my hand, and I did it that night, you know. And I was able to use that drug the whole time I was in there without getting caught. And I was able to get out on time when I was supposed to. I was even like some kind of house chair or something. And I only bring that up is because when I came here, I was a daily hard drug user, you know, and I would have told you I was an alcoholic and a drug addict. But the difference for me when it comes to alcohol and drugs is I can manage the drugs if the situation gets bad enough. You know, sometimes I got to be physically removed, put in jail or something to be like, well, I better stay away from that stuff. Anyhow, everybody else is doing this, so I better get into what they're all doing over here, you know. And I was able to manage that. I knew when I had urine screens, I knew when I had to stop, and I was able to stop, and I would drink water, pass that test, and then do it all over again. Even before coming to Alcoholics Anonymous, I knew there was no way that if I picked up any alcohol in that place that I'd ever get out of there, you know. Because there's something different. I am unable to control my alcohol consumption. I put it in me and it's like rolling dice. I have no idea what's going to happen. You know, that's what separates drugs and alcohol from me. And that's why I truly believe I'm an alcoholic at the core. You know, I tried to manage it. I tried to use substances to manage it. And sometimes it would work for a little while, but after some time, it would all end up backfiring on me. Nothing worked, you know. So, like I said, I got released from that halfway house and I ended up in Gloucester. And I knew nobody. I didn't have a driver's license. We lived about 10 miles in the woods from the nearest store, grocery store. I mean, I love those people and I'm also grateful to them, you know, because they gave me that opportunity. My family, you know, I got really close with my second cousins and them. And I mean, to the point where their father passed away, I got to take the youngest one to the father and daughter dance, all because I'm sober. I was sober when that happened. I was given that opportunity and that she even asked me, you know, and then like her friends asked her, like it's she wanted to go with them in the limo. And she's like, no, I want to go with Tony. She chose to ride with me and my Ford Explorer and go with her friends and in a limo, you know, just little things like that meant a ton to me. But I tell you this, the loneliness I felt at that time in my life was like, you know, I might as well, you know, when they talk about it's like an alcoholic with no program trying to stay sober is you might as well drink. You're more miserable then than you are with drinking. I truly believe that to be true because I had nowhere to go from my thoughts. I'd lay in bed at night and I would kick myself the whole entire night. You're this, you're that, you'll never be this. You got all these problems, this, that, and that. Just constant in my head. And I would stay up until the sun came up and then I'd pass out from lack of sleep because I'm trying to stay sober. And then I'd sleep as late as I could because I didn't want to deal with another day and did this over and over. And eventually I would break down and I'd be like, well, I'm going to Virginia Beach to drink where I know where some people are. So I'd go to the bar my sister worked at because I knew she'd look out for me. I knew that they would watch over me because I'm unpredictable when I drink, you know. I would do embarrassing, tragic things while I was there. Get up the next morning at her house, wait till 12 o'clock, go directly to her refrigerator and grab a beer and start it all over again. You know, it's like the four horsemen they talk about in the book. You know, I would wake up in the morning and be like, oh no, what did I do? I don't know what I did, but I know it's something bad. And then I would be on eggshells watching, waiting for somebody to drop the bomb. Like, you this or you that, or do you remember doing this? And sometimes that would happen and sometimes it wouldn't, you know. Horrible, you know. And eventually I got arrested because that's what I do. Yeah. I had been out partying and it was like late at night and I couldn't get in my sister's house. I had a friend that lived on the other side of Shore Drive, like a main highway for those of you that don't know. And I couldn't get in. I was freezing. All I had was a t-shirt on. So I'm going back and forth to each house, knocking on the door, trying to get somebody to let me in. And the police saw me, you know, and they ended up, they're like, what are you doing? I ended up getting a drunk in public. And this is me 6 months out of prison, doing my best to stay sober on my own. Yeah. 6 months, I made it. And you know what? I woke up that next morning and they released me. I had like $3 or $4 in my pocket. And I immediately left there and went across the street and got a six pack of beer and got on the bus. Because what do you do with that, man? I'm 6 months out of prison and here I am. Again, I don't know how to deal with that. But I know if I pour some booze on it, it'll make it go away. Yeah. And I got where I had to do ma mandatory Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, I had to do 14 meetings. I had to go to an IOP and I had to get a sheet signed. And I was looking at the meetings and there was a Wednesday night meeting that met after my IOP. Not only did they have a meeting, but they had two meetings. So I could do knock IOP out and two meetings all in one day out of the week. So I can get on to the real important stuff, you know, get me a job and get out there and do what's really important, you know. I wasn't looking to get sober, you know. And I started going to those meetings, man, and I would tap my floor. I'd grit. I'd have this scowl on my face the whole time. I'd come in at the last moment, leave as soon as possible. You know, inside I'm lonely and I'm dying, but I'm putting off this thing like leave me alone, you know. But something happened, man. I would go to that meeting and people would share. And the hair would literally stand up on my arm when some people would share. And I'd like shake my head like I was trying to shake it off. But I couldn't ignore it anymore. They were talking about me. You know, I had been forced into AA before that. When I was younger, I was way too cool for AA. You know, this isn't going to happen to me like it happened to you guys, you know, but 10 years of hard drinking will humble somebody fast, you know. And you know, I had this nice gentleman who started picking me up and taking me to meetings, yeah, because I couldn't drive. And that man ended up being my sponsor, and that's really where the hook was set in Alcoholics Anonymous for me. Because we talked about things that, you know, not everything is for everybody, or even for from the podium, you know. And those were the things he shared experiences about himself that, you know, I remember he would drop me off and I would go up the stairs and I'd be by myself and I'd be like, man, I can't believe this dude just told me that he did that. And then the next thought would be, it's like, you know what? I did that same thing. But here's this guy. I think he was 15 or 17 years sober at the time. I was the worst alcoholic there ever was when I came into the room, you know, like a lot of us are. But he had a heavier story than even what mine was, but this dude was sober. You know, he had a message of depth and weight that I've never had anybody come at me with before, you know. So it got my attention. You know, I had plenty of people my entire life saying you probably shouldn't drink. Or if you drink or else this is gonna happen. That stuff was never enough. You know, it wasn't until a gentleman came at me and said, yeah, but I did this stuff and I'm not drinking anymore. So, of course, it had my attention, you know. And there was a little more. I had to be spoon-fed Alcoholics Anonymous, you know. It's like I still wanted to do certain things my way, you know. And I tell you, it finally got to a point where I was like, all right, just tell me what to do. What do you want me to do? I tell you, from that point on, Alcoholics Anonymous has been easy. Know, I say that from experience. The only time this has been hard for me is when I didn't want to commit 100% and I wanted to do certain things a certain way for me. You know, once I fully committed and just said, tell me what to do, I really haven't struggled with having a drink, you know. But I've never got too far from Alcoholics Anonymous either in the time I've been sober, you know. There are certain things I was asked to do that I continue to do day in and day out, you know. There's times where I've done more, there's time when I've done less, but I've never got that far away. I've always had a home group, I've always had a sponsor. I always sponsored guys when they needed help. And I say yes when people ask me, you know. And it's so embedded in my life now that I don't know what I would do without Alcoholics Anonymous. It has become such a factor in my life that it's like, I don't know what else to do. All I know is when things get tough for me, I better lean on you and lean on Alcoholics Anonymous. The answer for me is to do more. No matter how difficult it seems, that has always been the answer for me. You know, and this too shall pass. You know, that's life, right? You know, sometimes used to be like this, you know, extreme highs and lows. You know, now it's a little more like this, you know. And I've been given tools here to know how to deal with these things. You know, I'm no spiritual giant. I don't claim to be. You know, a lot of my faith has been of the educational variety. I've been sober long enough and I've been through enough stuff and stayed sober that I believe. That's where a lot of my faith has come from. Not that I spend 30 minutes praying in the morning or this amount of time in meditation. It's I've never got too far away from Alcoholics Anonymous. And I've done what done it to the best of my ability. And if you're sober long enough, you live through things. It's going to happen whether you're sober or not. Life is going to show up. And the gift here is I've found a way to not have to drink through them. And I've found many opportunities to be of service to other people when I've been in those moments. That's where the character comes from, is when things are tough. If everything's, gravy, there's no lesson there. I don't know. That's just my thought on things. So I gotta speed it up. I ended up going through the steps, and it was, I did a lot of things in Alcoholics Anonymous and was unable to stay sober. It wasn't until since I've done those steps, I haven't picked up a drug or alcohol since. I had to do some other things, but that seems to have been the defining factor for me, was working those steps with a sponsor who had done it with a sponsor. And that got me sober. And now what keeps me sober is trying to share that gift. It's not my idea, it's in the book. And working with others, the first paragraph, I'll paraphrase it because it says, like, the best thing for long-term sobriety is extensive work with other alcoholics. So if my goal is to stay sober forever, the best thing I can do is find another struggling alcoholic. I had no purpose when I came to Alcoholics Anonymous. You could ask me what I wanted to do in my life, and I seriously did not have an answer for you. God has provided me a business and an opportunity to take care of myself, but ultimately my goal is to be useful to him and his children. And I'm uniquely qualified to do that here in Alcoholics Anonymous. I've done the work on both sides. I've earned my spot and I've done the work in AA, so best thing I can do is give it away. I tell you, when I think about being sober, everything good in my life to this day has been a reflection of Alcoholics Anonymous. I can somehow follow a branch back to AA. I started working, my background was in construction. I started working with a guy, gave me an opportunity. His business folded around 2005 when there was like the crash around 2005. I applied to get a driver's license. The judge embarrassed me and told me no. I came back a year later. I didn't even have to say anything. They gave me a driver's license. I started, my sponsor and I did a business course, and I ended up taking a class and got my Class C contractor's license and started doing work out of a Ford Explorer that my brother sold me cheap. And another guy in AA sold me a trailer full of tools well beyond fair. Another guy in AA hooked me up with an ex-girlfriend of his that was doing work for a real estate company in Richmond that owned a bunch of foreclosures when all that stuff was going down. So I started commuting back and forth to Richmond from Gloucester doing little handyman jobs. And it got to a point where I was like, I'm doing this every day. It's just me. I probably ought to move to Richmond. So I moved to Richmond, which was an easy move for me because I had already been involved in service with Alcoholics Anonymous. And I already knew a bunch of people when I came to Richmond. And I ended up moving probably 2 miles from a this place called the Healing Place, that is like a rehab center for all sorts of people, probably 100+ guys there. So I used to drive my truck over there and load that truck up and take them guys to meetings. I mean, where they were literally like hanging out of the tailgate. I'd have 8 or 10 guys in my truck, because that's what you showed me to do. I went to a meeting every day when I got there, and I started helping those guys. From that, I got sponsees, and I just got connected in AA. My business took off. I ended up getting a Class A contractor's license. I had 20 employees at one time. I ended up purchasing a plumbing company about 8 years ago that was initially a disaster. I had a right-hand man, and I had my brother working for me, and within 3 months my right-hand man passed away and my brother left. And I was left to manage a plumbing company that I knew nothing about plumbing, and this other act of aspect. I was like into everything because, like I said, I had 20 employees. We were doing additions, remodels, plumbing, HVAC. And I tell you, that's another hardest time in my life because I had purchased this thing for $1 million and I didn't have $1 million. And I had the everything that I had gotten from AA, because eventually I was able to buy a house. I had to put me pers I had to be the guarantor. So like, if I didn't make that payment, they could come after everything I owed. And it was tough. It was like, I went years thinking like, this is going to be the week, this is going to be the week where it all falls apart. I had to borrow money from my sponsor one time to make payroll. I had another employee that put up like 10 grand for me just to keep it afloat till we could get a member of the program, I should say, who helped me to keep it afloat. I ended up having to just, I was so stressed out that I would wake myself up grinding my teeth. And in the morning, my jaws would be sore from where I was gritting my teeth so hard at night. But you know what? AA showed me just, suit up and show up. When my MO was to cut and run. I mean, if I was drunk, I would have took what money I had and I would have been gone. And I, through some strange events, I was able to pull it off. And now I'm out of that. I'm almost like I got less than 2 years before I pay the company off. It's settled, so much, but it was not easy, man. I was being t taken advantage of at every turn, by the prior owners, employees, bookkeepers. I mean, it was a tough go, But I remember being an AA, and there was this gentleman that I really looked up to, and I was telling him what was ha happening. And he looked at me in this matter-of-fact way, man, like, oh, he was like, oh, yeah, but you'll be all right. God didn't carry you this far to drop you. And something about when he shared that with me, I heard him. It gave me just a little more strength, It worked out. I've had relationships where, I thought I was going to marry somebody on Sunday and they were gone on Tuesday. I was able to be there for my mother when my stepfather went through a 12-hour surgery for cancer. They had to reconstruct his face when he came out of there. He couldn't talk. He couldn't eat through a tube. And a year later, I was the one that was with her in the hospital when he passed away. I watched him take his last breath, And, you would think that was a terrible time. And it was tragic. But man, I am so grateful that I was able to be there for her. And just to be like, not have to fix it, just be able to be like, whatever you need, Mom. Tony, can you call this person? Yes, Mom, no problem. Like I said, AA has given me a gift I can never, ever, ever repay, And I'm always grateful for the opportunity to do something like this. And thank you for keeping me sober, and thank you for the opportunity.
Yeah.